Once again, from a very snowy New Hampshire, it is Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. If you're here for the first time, welcome in. This week's show, a little wrestling talk. No MMA talk. We may do that a little bit later this week. But a little wrestling talk, because there's been some things swirling around in my head. A couple things. Things that confuse me, bother me, irk me. You're not complaining, but, you know, some things that I'm very confused about. So I wanted to find someone new, someone to talk about these things with, a therapist, if you will. And I found that person, you know, in this era of invasions and crossovers and things like that. I figured, why not get someone from outside the family? So I went to voicesofwrestling.com, found Rich Kraich, the one and only Rich Kraich from voicesofwrestling.com, co-host of the flagship show, a lot of great stuff there. And he and I talked about three things that confused me about pro wrestling. And we took a little bit about WWE, a little bit about AEW and Impact Wrestling as well. Good show. Goes about probably like an hour 15 or so. We just kept talking and talking and talking. And also talked a little bit about the Chicago White Sox in the 1990s. That just came up organically. So this was a lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoy it. And let's get right to it. Three things that confuse me about professional wrestling with Voices of Wrestling's Rich Kraich. Enjoy. Well, in this era that we're in now of cross promotion and different wrestlers appearing on different brands and anything could happen, I figured one of the guys from Voices of Wrestling should be on this show, crossing over this week, right now. Rich Kraich from Voices of Wrestling, of course, is joining me this week. And Rich, the invasion's begun. And how you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah, the takeover has begun. It's the lines are, you know, are the forbidden doors have been swung open, and now people are crossing lines and doing all sort of crazy stuff. But thank you for having me. We were before the show trying to figure out when, you know, if I had ever been on any sort of F4W or Wrestling Observer property. And the only one I can remember was way, way, way back in the day. I was on an Allen, I think a Christmas draft or something like that Allen did. But that had to be 3-4 years ago at this point, the Allen 4L. Christmas draft. So yeah, it's been a long time coming, but I'm super glad to be on here, and I'm excited. This should be a fun show.
Yeah, it should be. 3-4 years ago feels like 8 years ago at this
point.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's hard to believe that this is the same. Yeah, it is unfathomable to me that about this time last year I was getting ready to go to AEW Revolution. That show was only a year ago, and it's like the idea of me and my friends, you know, getting in a car together, you know, first off, like that, just starting there, just seeing my friends, I guess, is the first part. Me and my friends getting in a car together, driving to a very well-populated part of the city of Chicago, and then going into an arena with, you know, 15,000 people. Seems like it happened 40 years ago, but believe it or not, it was less than a year ago at this point, but hopefully soon enough.
Yeah, I was trying to think. So the last show would have been too, is a local indie, and it's, there's this hope in the future. You know, in a WWE call, the financial call we were just talking about beforehand, they mentioned that, you know, they're looking at the earliest second half of the year. And I could see that. And it depends if they go, you know, full bore into it, or if they want to do kind of what AEW is doing, you know, smaller shows or, you know, or less attended shows and things like that. But it's, you know, I think as more people get vaccinated and more people feel comfortable, it's just going to be like, I think people are going to dip their toes in the water. Some people are going to rush right into it, as we've seen, you know, throughout the country and in some unfortunate situations. But it's I think people are just going to get into it. And I think, you know, I think a year from now, next year's WrestleMania, I think it'll be like things will be kind of quote unquote back to normal. I would hope anyway, you know?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, the idea, like, it will definitely be. I think the rest of this year, there's going to be people that are pretty skittish and whatnot. Yeah. And even, like, you know, even now, like, my wife, who's a nurse and has been unbelievable during all this shit, she is fully vaccinated. She's gotten both of the shots. She's doing all that sort of stuff. But even then, she's still kind of just like, you know, just in case. Like, just, you know, there's still that sort of apprehension. I do a ton. And obviously, I am, you know, just a 30-year-old male, so I don't know when I'm going to get vaccinated. Probably never, but or, you know, 20 late this year, or maybe never, who knows. But, you know, it for her, it's been a little bit of a weird adjustment. Like, okay, well, I'm good, but like, I can't just start like kind of wandering around, you know, mask glitch, just being like, woo, let's go. I'm ready, back to normal. Like, I still can't quite do that. But I think it will be something that, little by little, throughout the rest of this year, people will slowly, as you said, kind of get back into it. And then hopefully by 2022, and hopefully for something like a WrestleMania weekend, would be awesome if people are able to travel from all across the world and just have a blast and just go back to enjoying live wrestling. Because I'm very much ready to just scream and watch wrestling again.
That's right. I think all of us are. Yeah, without having to be told we can't scream or can't yell or anything like that. Exactly. That is going on in Japan, right? I forget to ask you. So you're from Illinois. Are you White Sox, Cubs, or not a baseball fan?
I'm a White Sox fan. Yeah, I kind of got birthed into it, and I'm happy to do that. It's to me, it always felt like the even growing up, like I wasn't really given a choice, but you know, if I wanted to have the choice, I probably could have moved over and whatnot. But I was born in 1987, so. When I really started becoming a sports fan, when I really became, a big time fan, obviously you have the Bulls and Michael Jordan, so that was kind of easy to choose there. Yeah. As I'm going to like the team that wins all the championships. That's not bad. That's the team in my hometown. But the White Sox were like super, the black uniforms were cool. Dr. Dre had, wore the White Sox mm-hmm. hat in all those videos, and Frank Thomas was there. So it was real easy to just be like, you know what? I'm a Sox fan, and I have no issue doing that. So yeah, I'm still very much a White Sox fan. That honestly is what I'm looking forward to, maybe even more than wrestling, is going to a baseball game again, because that's one of my favorite parts about the summer, is just going to a game, especially White Sox games, which, tickets come by, relatively affordable, and, a lot of room to spread out in the stadium, because not that many people go. But that's one of the things I really miss, is just a hot summer day, just going out there, drinking and watching baseball. And I can't wait to do it again.
So as a youngster growing up in the woods of Western Maine, of course, the Red Sox being in New England, the Red Sox are your team, but you tend to kind of look outside a little bit and drift outside the range, and baseball cards were a big part of that with me. And I remember, I'll never forget the day I opened up a Topps pack and saw a picture of a young first baseman from Auburn, who you just mentioned, Frank Thomas, mm-hmm. and he has been my favorite player ever since.
That's awesome. Yeah,
he is number 35. Yeah. That's my number 35. Like, that is... If for some reason, it's one of those things that always clicked, and I have an autograph ball, a bat. I happen to be at what was then called U.S. Cellular, I think, when he hit his 400th home run, just by pure luck. We were doing a cross-country trip, my friend and I. We did 5 games in 7 days across the Midwest. We did 2 games at Wrigley, 1 game at U.S. Cellular, 1 game in Milwaukee, and 1 game in St. Louis, Old Bush Stadium. Drove 1,200 miles in 7 days. And with the game, we just happened to be there, Frank Thomas's 400th home run. But yeah, Frank Thomas, when Bo Jackson was with the team, that was obviously a lot of fun. Robin Ventura, that team's, they were just like Black Jack McDowell. I keep going over in my head.
Yeah,
they
were just cool as hell. Super cool.
And then the Michael Jordan dalliance with baseball and that whole thing. That was just, it's just weird, because I have this connection, because I just was always like, that was my other team, even though they're in the AL. But those, I used to love watching games.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. So I think he hit that 400th homer, and this is off the top of my head, so I'm sorry if I'm wrong, but you would probably remember if you remember being there. It was against the Rays, right? The then Devil Rays, correct?
That could have been. I cannot remember for the life of me, but very possible. Think, yeah.
I think I was trying to go. I'm almost positive, because that summer I went to so many White Sox games. That summer, I believe it was 2003 that he hit that 400th mm-hmm. homer. And I remember just going to a ton of games that year. I think the one reason why is like my school, if you got perfect attendance, would just give you a ton of tickets. So if you got every quarter that you got perfect attendance, they would give you free White Sox tickets. Because like, again, the dollar value of White Sox tickets is pretty low, especially in 2003, prior to winning the World Series. So they were like, yeah, sure, here, take this like $5 ticket or whatever. So my buddies and I were like, all right, nobody miss any school, because then once the summer comes, we're going to go to as many White Sox games as possible. And I'm almost positive I wasn't at the 400 home run game, but I was either at the game before or the game after, and we tried to plan it out. And I was like, if you look at the numbers, let's go tomorrow. Tomorrow will be the good day. He'll probably get a 400th homer that day or whatever. Yeah. And I remember watching on TV, and he just bangs that homer, and the crowd's going nuts. And I'm like, no, not going to be there. But I'm glad you were able to be there. But that sounds like an awesome, awesome trip. And that's a cool moment to see. I was able to go there when they retired his number and a few other, his first game back. Against the White Sox when he was on Oakland, I want to see. Yeah, Oakland.
Yep, yep.
So just remember, I tried to go to as many like Frank Thomas moments as I could, and unfortunately, I mistimed the 400th home run and missed that one. So
Yeah, good memory against the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, July 25th, 2003.
There you go. I went to a lot. I was also like a kind of a weird Devil Rays fan at that time because they were like so bad, it's so horrendous that it was just kind of funny to like. And one of the memories I have of that year as well might be a name that you remember, Rocco Baldelli, who was the center fielder for the Rays at that time. Like, you know, so we go there for batting practice, and this is, you know, you're talking about in the middle of like 4 p.m. on like a weekday. You know, the 2003 White Sox versus the 2003 Devil Rays. It wasn't a very well-attended batting practice. And I remember us just, like, standing out there, and I made a sign for Rocco Baldelli. My wrestling roots, you know, coming through there with the, you know, making a sign, you know, for a player. And he just walks over, and he's like, is that really a sign for me? He's like, are you guys kidding? Like, you really made a sign for me? And we're like, yeah, you're awesome. And he's like, how do you even know who I am? He, like, couldn't believe that, like, we knew who Rocco Baldelli even was. And he just sat and chit-chatted with us for, like, 20 minutes while he shagged fly balls. And it was just an awesome moment because just, like, nobody was asking him for autographs. Nobody came up. He was just like perfectly content, just like standing at the wall, catching any ball that came near and just kind of talking to us for a while. But he ended up signing that, you know, that smell what the Rocco was cooking sign or whatever the hell I put on it. I'm sure it had to be a wrestling reference. I'm positive it had to be a Rock reference or like, you know, something like that. But yeah, that's many memories of that 2003 White Sox team for sure.
Well, let's talk about some wrestling. We'll talk a little bit about Voices of Wrestling after a little bit here. But I want a few random like wrestling thoughts rattling around in my head, and I was trying to like condense them. Being okay, how do we kind of figure this out? But so I think it's things that confuse me about pro wrestling. That's kind of my theme for tonight. And I have three things that kind of that confuse me about pro wrestling in 2020. Not complaints for those people who get pissed off about complaints. Everyone bitching about this. Not demos, you know. But and we'll kind of start here. And feel free to disagree with any of these, and we'll see if you have any of your own after I go through these three. So we'll kind of start with this one. So we're recording this on Tuesday night. Impact is going on as we speak. You can feel the vibrations, the earthquake vibrations from what's happening on the show, of course. Things that confuse me about pro wrestling, number one, I don't get this AEW Impact thing at all. And I don't get it in the fact of, I was kind of apprehensive when it started because I have my doubts about Impact just because of its history. That might not be fair to current management, but they just have this long legacy of just not being good. And you know, everything they touch kind of turns to shit. Unfortunately, it a lot of times, I mean, they've had to deal with the Vince Russo stuff, the Dixie Carter era, just a lot of just weird stuff through the years. And so they have new management and all this stuff, but it's just going to take a while to kind of remove that stink that they've had for so long. So I'm suspect of that. And then, you know, on the AEW side, I'm kind of like, well, what did they get out of this? And so far they've got out of this, this angle with you know, the Good Brothers have come over and done a couple matches, and it's like, okay. And they have, you know, Don Callis, but Omega's champion. But to me, like, I don't really see what they're getting out of it yet. And I think people are so excited that this is going to be like a full-on blown, like, invasion back and forth. And you've seen a little bit of crossover with Impact with, you know, Private Party going over there. You had Tony Khan and Jerry Lynn going over. Helping Private Party win. There was that appearance, these commercials, the quote unquote paid ads that I think have got worse as time has gone along and don't really make a lot of sense. I mean, we're sitting here in early February and this thing has been going on since December. And I, you know, I'm not looking for WWE style, like crash booking, like let's get this thing going like so quickly. I'm not really into it. And I don't know what each side gets out of it other than kind of loaning a few talents, but from where people thought this was going to start to where this was going to be. And I was hesitant from the start when people are like, oh, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. It still might. I'm just not really seeing a lot of seeds for that yet. I'm just seeing seeds for like this one angle at the top and really nothing else from that. I mean, what do you think? Are you into this? Not in this? What do you think?
I think you're on the right track for sure. And I think I agree with a lot of what you did say about the angle. And I've kind of said as such as well on podcasts is, you know, when the first angle went down and, you know, we had to ask ourselves, okay, what's in it for both these companies? What's in it for AEW? What's in it for Impact? Who benefits in this way? You know, what'll benefit, all that sort of stuff. And my initial take was, you know, Impact, of course, the benefit from Impact is going to be obvious. They get Kenny Omega on their broadcast, and the Impact and the benefit to Impact, I should say, you know, right off the bat was the ratings. I mean, that first night when Kenny Omega was going to appear, you saw it in the ratings, you saw it in the Twitch streams, you saw it in the followers, you saw it in YouTube subscribers. It was an immediate one day rush to, you know, people that had never watched Impact before or never hadn't watched Impact since the Russo era or since the Dixie Carter era or since the Hulk Hogan era or since like any of the number of eras that you mentioned. Like, it seemed like a lot of them went back, checked it out, saw it, you know, were interested again in Impact for that one night to see, hey, what is Kenny Omega going to do and what, you know, what sort of, you know, kickstart this invasion or whatever it's going to be and you know, see what you know, what is going to happen there. And the problem, though, is, and you know, I mentioned it the episode of, and anybody that saw that episode of Impact, is that it was just a very paint-by-numbers normal episode of Impact that had, you know, happened to have Kenny Omega, you know, in the last segment of the show for, you know, inside of a bus, you know, cutting a promo, which I thought was a tremendous promo, and I thought the stuff with Callis and him was really, really good. But in the end, if you were a new fan or an old fan or a lapsed fan or whatever that went and watched this episode of Impact, you saw everything that makes Impact kind of bad these days and things that make Impact not that enjoyable. And I'm somebody who has tried to give Impact the benefit of the doubt, has tried to go and say, okay, clean slate, let's watch the show. And they've had some ups and they've definitely had some downs. And that in particular was just a bad week of their show. And it really proved like a lot of the things that people kind of laugh at about Impact or that Impact just doesn't quite do well was evident on that show. So I'm thinking, oh man, that's not good. Cause they did not put their best foot forward. That yes, they had Kenny Omega in the last segment. Yes, they had Don Callis in the last segment. And we saw tangibly that the numbers showed that people were checking it out, that people were going to watch it for that Kenny Omega to see, you know, what was going to happen. And what they presented was basically their same normal show. And then just a Kenny Omega segment, you know, lopped onto the end or you know, kind of tacked onto the end. So that was initially like, ooh, how, you know, is this going to sustain that? And we see it now clearly, you know, a month or 2 months now afterwards, is that it is not sustained. Anytime Kenny Omega's on the screen or anytime Kenny Omega's doing a segment, that stuff does pretty okay. It does all right in the ratings. It does all right in YouTube. But the rest of the show, it hasn't grown otherwise. Those people that checked it out maybe for Kenny Omega did not stay. They haven't become Impact fans. They haven't, you know, rekindled their love of Impact. So from that standpoint, the benefit to Impact has been somewhat minimal, because they have not capitalized on those new viewers, those new eyeballs, those new, you know, whatever. So to them, like initially it was like, well, no, it's a no-brainer what the, you know, the benefit to Impact was, but we've already seen that benefit kind of burnt through. That benefit's already kind of gone to me. And for AEW, I think they actually, in a weird way, where, you know, initially when it started, I'm thinking, man, what is AEW? I mean, why are they doing this? They don't need to do this at all. There's just no benefit to them whatsoever. Well, in fact, what AEW's gotten out of it, I think, you know, is actually, you know, is better than what, you know, Impact's gotten out of it, because they've been able to get, you know, another belt eventually, I think is obviously going to be the long-term thing, or at least another, you know, whatever they're going to do with Kenny, you know, moving forward, they'll have something there. Either he's going to collect another belt or he's going to, you know, do whatever. So you have Kenny Omega, who's kind of there and the star of that show and, you know, winning matches and beating main eventers and doing all that sort of stuff. So you have that, and that's obviously a benefit to kind of building up that Kenny Omega character and adding some juice to that. But now you've also found a way to, you know, kind of backdoor the Good Brothers into AEW, you know, even though, you know, we'll see how long that lasts and how fruitful that relationship is, but they've kind of found a way to tell that little story. And now they have this story of the Good Brothers and Kenny versus the Bucks and the Good Brothers and Kenny and the Bucks and the tension there and that sort of stuff. So in a weird way, AEW, I think, has gotten a little bit more out of this and will get more out of it. But I'm with you, though, that, like, you know, when it was going down, when it was first announced, it felt like, oh man, there's a lot of opportunities here. But I think quickly everybody kind of realized, oh, but AEW is AEW, and they're kind of a few steps ahead of where Impact is now. And Impact is still just kind of Impact, and you know, yeah, you can put Kenny Omega on there. Yeah, you can put Don Callis on there. Yeah, you can promote it on AEW television. But at the end of the day, it's still Impact Wrestling, and it still has, like you said, that sort of something about the brand. It's just it's a volatile brand. It's just a brand that people just they will check it out. But if they're even slightly proven that this is just the same Impact, or it kind of sucks, they're done. They're going to turn away, because they've been burnt before by Impact. You know, like you said, many of the other eras that Impact has gone through. So I see the benefit for AEW, and I still do. I'm less and less seeing the impact or the benefit for Impact as the time goes on, and we see that those numbers just don't reflect any real long-term or sustainable growth from Kenny Omega kind of coming in and dominating.
Yeah. So a few things there. So you mentioned that first show, and I think it was the first show, maybe even been the second one, where they did the Dreamer Scott D'Amore segment kind of backstage, where they were sitting at the table, and you know, Scott D'Amore was like, "Oh, look at these social media things and these numbers and all that stuff." And you know, Tommy was kind of talking about, you know, basically not trusting Don Callis. He's supposed to be with Impact, but then, you know, this whole thing's going on, and Scott seemed to be looking at the, you know, looking at the star rather than worrying about the company. I'm like, okay, that's cool. There's going to be some, that's kind of going to be part of this. They've done nothing with that. And yeah. That's the thing, is there's no, like, it didn't seem like there was a long, there wasn't like immediate backstage things with D'Amore and Khan, you know, with Scott D'Amore, you know, being, being deferential to Tony Khan about how to run a wrestling company, something that may, you know, would kind of build up Tony Khan as a heel, which I think he's trying to be with these ads, but they're not. The problem is he's running down Impact, but there's no one defending Impact, right? I mean, there's no back and forth that, like, even a Rich Swann. I know Swann's been involved in this, you know, that the top angle with Omega, and, you know, obviously we think for the the Rebellion pay-per-view, that's going to be the main event. But there hasn't been any, like, anyone on these paid ads are running every week, but it's almost like they're not even acknowledging that they're happening, right? It's like if somebody was running down your company, you'd want to have some sort of response. You know, it's not even they don't even really mention on commentary. I don't think it's just kind of something that just exists as if they're not even aware that it's happening. And so that kind of hurts part of it. And again, so from the Impact side, you're right. The rings haven't done anything. And I think you made a great point there that that first show should have been their best possible show that they could do, you know, just knock it out of the park, do what you can do. But it just, it wasn't. And I think, again, to your point, the people could see, people know that on YouTube, like almost immediately after the show wraps, they're like, I don't care about any of this other stuff. I can just watch the Omega segment. I can spend 16 minutes watching an interview versus 2 hours having to wait for it. There's enough wrestling. They're like, look, I don't have enough time. We'll get to, you know, and that's something that's actually a theme I'm going to bring up a little bit later. But so I think from the Impact perspective, it's they're getting the rub, but they haven't really done anything in these 2 months. And, you know, the whole private party thing is like, we'll see how that goes. But I just, there's just not enough there that's really hooking me in of interest. And on the AEW side, you know, it's like the Good Brothers cool, but I mean, we've seen them a few times already. So when does that novelty kind of wear off? And once they do the Bucks match, does anyone really care? And of course they have their obligations. So yeah, I'm underwhelmed, and I wasn't coming into this, as I mentioned earlier, I wasn't coming into this whole angle from the start thinking that it was going to be a full blown invasion, because it just, the way they set it up didn't really seem like that. But I'm also like, there's no, you know, what are the dream matches that Omega's going to have in Impact? They have talented guys, but there's, you know, no one's clamoring to see Kenny Omega and Eddie Edwards, you know? No one's clamoring to see Omega and Sami Callihan or something. They don't really have like a roster that has, they have good mid-tier guys, but they don't have a lot of those upper echelon, like, I got to see that match type stuff. And that's, you know, that's kind of just and then without these other things to kind of bring it along, it's like, well, what's the point? I know, I guess, you know, Tony Khan wanted like a hot angle to start the year. It just hasn't done it for me yet, and could reheat, but I don't know. Just it's weird. Just hasn't things. I just don't. I'm just confused about what we're seeing or what we're supposed to be seeing.
Yeah, and I think it's totally fair. And one of the things I brought up from day one, and Joe Lanz and I, who hosts the Voice of Wrestling flagship podcast, brought up, you know, when this thing was initially going on, is okay. So Kenny's there now. Let's say Kenny is an Impact. He's going to be, who challenges him? Who does he face? Who's that top star? Who's the one that gets you excited? Who's the match that gets you excited? What's the program that gets you excited? And that's one of the issues, is that now with Impact, when you have a star on the level of Kenny Omega who arrives, they don't have anybody ready to go. They don't have anybody that's like, oh, well, here's our star to battle this guy's star. They don't have that. Classic territory type thing where, you know, the NWA champion is in. So you're the top guy in your territory goes to face Ric Flair or whatever. So your Kerry Von Erich steps up. Your Michael Hayes steps up. Any number of guys step up and they step up to the plate to face the NWA champion because they're the star of your territory. They're the star of this area or whatever. you don't have that in Impact. You have Rich Swann, who, like, I like Rich Swann. Rich Swann's great, but he's not that level. You know what I mean? He's not like the guy that's going to, you know, put Impact on his back and say, no, 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 you're, you know, you're Kenny, you're coming in and invading my territory. Well, I'm the top guy. Rich Swann wasn't that guy. And Moose, I guess, could be that guy, but they hadn't had him. They didn't really have him ready for that spot when Kenny came in. And I think they are now realizing that he might be that guy that they're going to maybe use, you know, in whatever situation this is going to be or whatever end game this is, you know, maybe it's Moose beating Kenny Omega or some sort of way to do that. Cause you have seen them sort of rally behind Moose a little bit more and realize, okay, maybe that's our guy that we got to push. But like you said, that's it. That's all we're talking about. I mean, nobody is saying, oh man, I can't wait to see Kenny Omega and Eddie Edwards. Oh man, I can't wait to see, you know, Kenny Omega and Trey Miguel. I can't wait to see, you know, Kenny Omega and Sami Callihan. I can't wait to see Kenny Omega and Tommy Dreamer. And like, none of those guys really excite you on any level. And it's nothing against those guys. Like, all those guys have benefit and they have value. It's just Impact really lacks that big time star, that guy that feels like he's no doubt the top guy in the company. And you see that exposed when a guy like Kenny Omega comes up and it's like, all right, who's going to step up and face Kenny? And it's just like, nobody, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, just this roster of guys that are like, oh yeah, we're here and we're in Impact. And it really shined a light, I think, an unfortunate light on Impact of, oh, you guys don't really have like a bona fide star. There's not really anybody that you've pushed and that you've put into that level. And I think that it really exposed that. And I think that ultimately will probably be the death knell of the entire thing.
Yeah. You mentioned Moose. I think he could be the biggest beneficiary out of all this. I think he looked, you know, he looked great in that time off from December to January. He lost some weight and he like looks awesome. That Hard to Kill match, he was like flying around. Mm-hmm. He to me, he's been so far the biggest beneficiary. And I think if, you know, we'll see. I mean, there's 2 months to go before Rebellion. Perhaps maybe they go, I can see them wanting to go with Swann Omega, but maybe he gets interjected there somehow, or maybe the long-term thing is, look, if Omega's going to beat Swann for the title, maybe we do this, we build up Moose for the guy that's going to beat Omega eventually, if that does happen. So, that he could be the big beneficiary, but again, you kind of need that supporting cast to kind of help figure that out. We'll get more to AEW in a minute here. So I want to go to number two. So we'll go to WWE to satiate the, you know, I don't know if you know us here on WrestlingObserver.com. We're co-opted by AEW.
Oh, yeah, I've heard. Yeah, we are too. Yeah, believe it or not.
Good.
I just actually, you know, while we're talking, let me do this direct deposit. Make sure, you know, you can deposit the checks on your phone now. So I'll do that right now. My giant, I think I forgot there was that that spreadsheet that was going around. And I forget how much my website got, maybe $110,000 a month or whatever, which is fantastic money. So yeah, congratulations to us who are all making a ton more money thanks to one TK Tony Khan. So
that's right. I mean, those checks, they keep on coming through, and we'll keep y'all saying that they're great.
It's so silly that I still, despite making all that money every single month, I still wake up at 6 a.m. every day and go to my job for 8 hours and then come home and do this sort of stuff. But I mean, whatever, you know, you got to do it. You know,
good, give the people what they want, right? Is that the
So
WWE, last week, Edge debuting on NXT, and nobody gave a shit. The ratings weren't that great. And I mean, a limited amount of people gave a shit. And the ratings weren't that good. The ratings for SmackDown were even, and people seem to be surprised by this, except me, because I think we are in this era now that you can see, let's see, best way to put this. You can see pretty much anyone you want for any given amount of time you want in any given day and any given period of time. So if you really were like itching to watch some Edge stuff, you could throw on the WWE Network and you could knock yourself out for days on end just watching just Edge stuff, right? So Edge comes back at the Royal Rumble. Nice nostalgia return. This is after he had already been on Raw to announce his return and so on. And he does the Rumble match. Great. He wins it. Whatever you want to say about a returning part-timer winning, whatever. That argument has been out there forever, and it's going to go on forever. That's just how it goes. But then he comes back on Raw the next night, and then he's on NXT, and then he's on SmackDown. So I'm not surprised that people are like, I got it. Like, this is the thing with YouTube. I can, or DVR, I can just fast forward to whatever he needs to say, or I can just watch this clip and I'm going to get the important stuff and I'm good. I don't have to watch the rest of the show because I got other stuff I want to watch, other stuff I want to do. I just saw him for an hour in the Rumble. I know he's not going to challenge the NXT champion, right? And With Finn Balor, you know, he's NXT champion, but he feels like the least, like, not a buzzworthy champion. He just, compare some of these other guys that have held the title, really been the guy that you can't wait to see get to the main roster. That's how I've always kind of seen NXT. I think most people have too. You know, they have these blowaway matches and he's great, but you know, he's been on the main roster. So it's kind of like he's here, but what's, you know, what are we doing here? How long is he going to be here? And so on. And I don't think people are like that excited to see an interaction between Edge and Finn Balor. Cause again, what are you going to get out of it? And I can just watch stuff on YouTube the next day or even later that night if I really want to see everything. So I was surprised by people, you know, and again, leading to SmackDown, you had just seen him like three times in the week prior. There's no, you know, there's what, like, what's the intrigue, I guess. And I think, you know, the argument that was being had, and I actually had this with some of our editors on our internal Slack channel, was, you know, it's a WWE Hall of Famer, big star coming back. He's interacting with these guys and hasn't been around for a long time. It's like, well, I think people are just, they get it now. I think fans are like, most are like, I have my itch scratched and I'll know when it's interesting to come back and watch something. If there's, again, I can just watch it whenever I want. I was surprised by the reaction that people were shocked that he didn't do any numbers. I mean, if he was wrestling on NXT, maybe, I mean, I think that would have been interesting, but you know, just an appearance, I think people are like, I see these people all the time. Why am I getting excited about this on a Wednesday? So that was one of the things that confused me, was the reaction to people not caring about Edge on NXT and not doing bumping ratings.
Yeah, the Edge thing has been fascinating. It's been really, really interesting to see. And, you know, obviously we're recording this, and I think the Raw ratings came out a few hours prior to us recording here, and they were, you know, pretty ghastly as well, which, you know, does another dent in the armor of Edge. But no, I think you're absolutely right, and it's something, you know, there's two points that I wanted to bring up with Edge, and you hit the number one there, is it's not enough for me to see Edge is going to be on this show. Watch it. Like, why would I watch that? I don't care. Like, it's not that, like you said, if Edge is going to say anything important, I'm going to be able to hear about it on Twitter. I'm going to be able to watch it on YouTube or whatever. It's not compelling enough that Edge is going to come out and he's going to say something, like you said. But if it was the idea that Edge is going to face Kyle O'Reilly in a match, you know, like, or Edge is going to face Blank in a match or whatever, that's compelling. That's like, okay, cool. I want to be, you know, see that. That's a pretty cool moment. That's a pretty interesting moment. You know, that's something that's definitely worth checking out. But yeah, Edge is going to be there is not, I don't know that that's enough of a hook, and I don't know that really, you know, is enough of a hook in almost any era with any star, where it's just like, hey, that guy is going to be here. You know, that maybe worked for The Rock, and it maybe worked for Stone Cold Steve Austin, and maybe it works for Hulk Hogan, but it doesn't work, you know, for a guy like Edge. And I think that brings up my second point as well, is that we've entered this weird era, and I brought up this point on you know, the Voice Wrestling flagship that I did last week, is we've reached this era in WWE where now we are pushing guys, and now we have decided that these guys of the past, because obviously it's all about the past stars, and the past stars are much bigger, but we can't keep going back to Attitude Era stars. We can't keep going back to 80s stars. So now we've moved on to, you know, the Edges of the world, the Christians of the world. Those guys are our new wave of kind of nostalgia stars that will now kind of come and you know, big parts of the company. The problem, though, with that is Edge was never Goldberg. Edge was never Stone Cold Steve Austin. Edge was never Hulk Hogan. Edge was never The Rock. Edge was never even Triple H. Edge was never Shawn Michaels. He was never Ric Flair. He was never on that level. But now, because they've kind of gone through all of those guys, that now we've entered this weird era where WWE is pushing and sort of assuming that, oh, well, it's Edge, so you're going to go watch him, when it's like, I mean, go look at the numbers when Edge was, you know, on top. They weren't exactly like, you know, doing gangbusters then. So it's like you're trying to tap into an audience that didn't exist even in Edge's prime. And you're trying to tap in to fans who stopped watching when Edge, you know, was a top star. So it's this weird thing where they've just kind of decided, well, Edge is a big star and Edge is a guy people are going to want to watch. And it's like, I mean, not that many people wanted to watch Edge when he was a star. And that's nothing again. I like Edge. I always have liked him. I like his in-ring. I like his characters. I like all that sort of stuff. But from a, like, you know, put your business analyst hat on, like, he wasn't really that, you know, there's the live sex celebration after he went the Money in the Bank. And obviously that, you know, did tremendous ratings. But like, not to, you know, discredit Edge entirely, but I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, probably watched for the idea that, hey, Lita, live sex, great. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I don't know that Edge was the main hook of that. I'm sure Lita definitely helped on that. And yeah, there was definitely some momentum going on with Edge when he first won that title. And there's no doubt about it. But, you know, very quickly after, Edge was just kind of a dude. And you look at the ratings patterns, and it wasn't like business was really booming when he was there. It's not like you can tangibly point to, oh, well, you know, he did this or he did this for business. He didn't. But we're now entering this era where they can't go back to the guys that really were money draws. And now we've entered this just weird period where we're going to push guys that I don't know were ever on that star level anyway. And that's like what's so interesting about this is that it's clear that WWE thinks, oh, hey, we're going to put Edge on NXT so people are going to watch NXT. And there's just no evidence that, A, that would have happened in any, you know, way. And then, B, you know, if you're not going to do anything compelling with him, why would anybody go and watch it? So I think you're absolutely right there. And it's definitely strange that, you know, they're entering this period. And you know, in any other era, in any other era of WWE, when they don't have guaranteed money, it'd be very interesting to see what they do with this Edge story, because it clearly has not worked, you know, for this first, you know, few weeks or whatever. You know, 5, 10, 15 years ago, there's no doubt in my mind that they pivot and go some other direction and just kind of bury Edge and do whatever, but they're going to go full steam ahead because they have no real reason not to. They can control the fans, they get guaranteed money, all that sort of stuff. But it's going to be funny to see if these trends continue, because, you know, this is WrestleMania season. This is when the ratings usually really kick up and really get going. The day after WrestleMania, or the day after Royal Rumble, I should say, up through WrestleMania, that is when traditionally fans are invested like they've never been invested in that calendar year. And that hasn't shown so far. So I am fascinated to see where the next month or 2 months go, and especially if they go full steam ahead with this Edge thing.
Yeah, compelling. I mean, I think that's the best word, right? I mean, this is ultimately what wrestling fans, what fans of any entertainment look for, is it can be compelling, make me interested. And with so many different forms of entertainment now, I mean, we've seen this with the Super Bowl rings that just came out today. They were still huge, but they were down because there was a few different factors that played into it, but the game wasn't compelling. You know, after there was the storylines leading in, there was definitely some of that, but there just wasn't enough to grab people's interest away from whatever streaming services they were using. And that live sports in general has ticked down because people are just there. A lot of these, you know, people that would have watched it before, there's like, I'll just watch a movie instead. There's, you know, 82 basketball games on a year. The Super Bowl, cool. I'm a Brady hater. I don't like Mahomes, or it's not that interesting. Or after the first half, they're like, nah, I'm good. Right. I mean, so you have to be compelling. And I think that's with pro wrestling the best storylines that we remember, and the best characters we remember, the things that made us fans to begin with. That's kind of what we're looking for now. And I think with the Edging, it hasn't really, it should be compelling because you have a guy that has come back, and maybe it's a little bit of the fatigue of the part-timer, you know, and maybe over the years, people are just kind of like, here we go again. Right. The Goldberg thing. How many other guys have come back, but like, I just think, like, again, the complaints about the part-timers, Cena made the joked about it when saying that he wasn't going to be at Mania, and he's like, look, I used to be the full-time guy complaining about the part-time guys like The Rock coming back, and now I'm in the position. You know, he's like, it's just weird how that kind of works out. It's like, well, yeah, you had a name, and people want to bring Vince always will gravitate towards that. Meanwhile, you have this loaded roster from top to bottom, all through NXT, from top down through Raw, SmackDown, NXT. They're loaded, and they can get anyone that they want within reason. But we're still having to go back in time, and it's just not as compelling. It's the age old complaint that people have. But I think they have some work to do to kind of stretch this Edge storyline out a bit for 2 months till we get to Mania and really make it like make us give a shit about him potentially winning a WWE title again. And then we have to kind of turn off in our brains to say, is he going to be around long term? Does it even make sense for him to win? Right? Because if he's not going to be around, then is this going to be a Brock Lesnar run again? It's like, probably not, but you hear him saying he wants to be around every week, but is that good? It's like, there's so many different, you know, conflicting things here, but yeah, hasn't really blown me away, but I'm not really surprised that he hasn't garnered that interest given how much they've kind of just pushed him out there so much instead of like slowly kind of like feeding him out there and making us want to see him rather than, okay, here's another Edge segment. I've seen this already.
Right. And you gotta, you know, obviously with last year as well. I mean, he was a big part of a lot of the early part of last year, you know, with the Orton stuff and the big matches that they had and all that. And, you know, had he not gotten hurt, there's no doubt that Edge would have been a big part of TV throughout the rest of the year. So it's not like, you know, there's this, you know, idea that oh, it's Edge is back. Oh my God. And it's like, well, yeah, we just saw him like 6 months ago. It's not like, you know, this isn't that first run. And even that first run, you couldn't point to it. But I think something that you mentioned there was hit it right on the head is that I think there is, and there has to be, I know, you know, I'm kind of a jaded, you know, business analyst fan or whatever, but like for me, just the constant barrage of part-timers, guys from the past, old guys, 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds, you know, they just coming in and coming in and coming in. And yeah, the end goal would be hopefully that, you know, he loses to Drew McIntyre or, you know, whatever, you know, that's the goal, trying to get the next guy over. But so few times has that actually played out. Like, how many times did Brock really help the next person? The biggest match that Brock lost in his entire WWE run was either, you can say, the Seth Rollins cash in, but even that wasn't a direct loss to, you know, by Brock Lesnar. But really the biggest loss that Brock Lesnar took was to Goldberg. Goldberg beat him in like, you know, a minute or whatever. And it's like, okay, well, geez, that, you know, that's the guy we really kind of get over here is Goldberg in the end. And, you know, obviously Drew will then, you know, win the title and yeah, obviously 2020 being what it was, you weren't able to kind of see that story all the way through. But I think from the lifeblood of wrestling, you know, not even WWE, not even WWF, not even whatever, the lifeblood of wrestling has always been young talent, new, young, exciting young talent. And Vince McMahon knew that for years and years and years. I mean, famously, by 91, 92, he's already figuring out, okay, Hogan, I can't use you anymore because you're 36. Randy, you're done as a full-timer because you're, you know, entering your 40s. Ric Flair, I have you for this year, but now I have nothing else left for you. I don't know what else to do with you. Like, that, Vince knew that. And like, he understood in that era that I need to get away from this. I need to build my young stars or whatever. And then he obviously got burnt a lot in a big way, you know, by WCW saying, hey, we'll take your old stars and we'll make them stars again. We'll go a second round, you know, with these guys. Forgetting that, of course, you know, Scott Hall and I think Kevin Nash, of course, were big parts of that as well. And they were still kind of new, exciting talents at that time. But it's not like that's one blip in the radar, because then Vince McMahon, you know, his counterpunch was, here's a 24-year-old in The Rock and, you know, a 31-year-old or whatever the hell, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin was in his era or whatever the hell, you know, Triple H was in his early 30s or late 20s. Yeah. So the counterpunch that Vince gave was young stars, and it worked tremendously. And it obviously grew that next level. And then you look at Cena, and Cena was another guy that was very, very young when they decided to go with him as one of the top stars. Randy Orton, a very young guy. Batista, you know, old in age, but young in terms of wrestling, you know, experience. So that's always been the lifeblood, is to get new fans is, you know, new, exciting wrestlers, because you can tell new, interesting stories with those guys. Somewhere along the line, he's just kind of forgotten that, or just kind of lost that, or it's just the security blanket of people of the past is just what he goes to now. And it's just, I don't know how many more times that can work. And clearly it's not anymore. And that is a real issue that they're going to have to figure out or discuss. I mean, other than them signing $1 billion contracts all the time.
That's true.
So I guess maybe it's not, but like, you know, they're still getting their money, which I guess is another issue as well. Is it's like, does it really matter? I mean, Vince McMahon could go in the middle of the ring and twirl around for 3 hours, and it's like, I'm still going to get $1 billion. So,
I know.
You know,
I
who know. Cares? Like, you know?
Yeah. Side note before I move on to my final one. Are you surprised we haven't heard anything about a hard to kill buy rate for the pay-per-view? I don't, and talking about like,
yeah, that's interesting. I haven't thought of that we haven't heard anything about that. Yeah,
Well, I've asked the big man himself, and he has not replied to me yet, so I don't know what.
It probably means the number wasn't good, because if the number was good, I feel like many people would be getting direct messages or emails saying, hey, here's the buy rate. I'm guessing the silence means, you know, we're not.
Yeah, well, that leads into the first point about the AEW Impact thing, but also, you know, the second one we were just talking about with Edge, if people are like, I see Kenny Omega all the time on AEW and I've seen enough matches, I know he's going to, you know, have stuff. Maybe they're like, the smart ones probably try to stream it or, you know, illegally stream it. And some other people are like, I'm not that compelled by this to watch this, you know, the reuniting of Omega and the Good Brothers on Impact. And, you know, even, you know, despite Stryker and D'Lo Brown tried to put over as like the biggest thing possible, you know, listening to that, I was just like, oh my God, dude, it's really.
Yeah. We made a joke about that. I think I have the quote. The exact quote was, you'll be telling your grandkids about the moment that you saw Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers. And I was like, I really hope not. Like, I really, really hope not. And if I if I do, I hope my grandkids are like, Grandpa, that's really dumb. Like, why are you telling us about this?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, what a pathetic life I've lived. And I'm like, I can't sit down and let me tell you. But Impact Wrestling Hard to Kill 2021 when Kenny Omega and the Good Brother. Yeah, like that was just a ridiculous line.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think maybe it's a little bit of that too. Like, look, I can see Omega anytime I want. And what's the big deal about this? And again, it goes back to compelling. The stars of Impact and all this stuff, and that is just not that, you know, just wasn't interesting. It was a great match. It was fun to watch, but it just, you know, I don't think it did enough. And again, the rest of the supporting cast, it just wasn't there. I also wonder why they had that Genesis show a week before. You know, they had the Super X Cup and they had some, you know, good wrestling on there. Why wouldn't you just try to combine that with Hard to Kill? And I don't know. I mean, the card was good, but you just kind of wonder, like, you know, you got... If you have the potential biggest audience, just make it the best possible show that you can. And I don't know. That just goes back to that first point we were talking
about. Yeah, well, and you know, not to kind of, you know, keep going on this point, but I think one of the things that I've always, you know, and I've really complained about Impact as of late is, you know, who does Impact appeal to? What fan? What, you know, what wrestling fan does Impact appeal to? And the answer I get from a lot of people is, well, all of them. And it's like, well, no, okay, that's bad business. Like, and you know, we both, you know, we work in this industry of, you know, niche, you know, wrestling, you know, websites and niche wrestling radio and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, you obviously want to have a broad appeal, and you want to be able to not just, you know, hone in on one specific bubble very, very tightly. But like, you also can't do all things to all people. You can't be a website of insiders and then super casual fans, you know, that you know, you can't, you just can't. I mean, that's just not, especially in 2021 and 2020, that's just not how business, you know, operates. And you look at, you know, the days of the megastore that, hey, you can buy everything under one roof. Like, those days are pretty, you know, at least for physical stores, are pretty well done and pretty over. And we see that with TV as well. There's a lot of TV and a lot of movies and a lot of, you know, sports, they appeal to their niche audience. They try to nail that niche audience as much as possible, but then also try to, you know, grow a little bit. But ideally, the idea is that you get as many more people kind of into your niche as possible. And I think AEW has identified their certain type of fan, and obviously WWE has, you know, their certain type of fan, which is, you know, WWE fans at this point, basically, with no new fans really coming. But like, when I watch an episode of Impact, I don't know who, like, because it's so jarring that, you know, one segment will be this, you know, cinematic thing with Sammy Callahan trying to, you know, kill Eddie Edwards and hunt his wife or whatever. And then you go to the ring and it's like Rich Swann versus somebody in just a normal old wrestling match. And, you know, Rich Swann wins and it's like, okay, cool. Then we go backstage and then Rosemary's, you know, eating somebody alive. And it's like, what universe is this? Like, what am I watching here? And it so badly tries to be everything for everybody. And it ultimately is nothing for anybody. Like, it doesn't appeal to any one wrestling fan in totality. So I think that also is another problem too, is it's like, what wrestling fan other than somebody that likes Impact or a quote unquote TV wrestling fan, like what wrestling fan does it appeal to? It doesn't appeal to your hardcore in-ring fans. It doesn't appeal to your kind of cinematic fans. It doesn't appeal to your independent wrestling fans. It doesn't appeal to your international wrestling. It, like, I don't know what fans it does, because it just tries to do half-assed attempts at all of them. And it ultimately just kind of ends up, you know, looking third rate.
So my final one, Tony Khan, turn the podcast off right now. I'll tell you that much.
If you want to get that money, yeah, let's.
That's right. Sure. That's right. Yeah.
Make sure that check goes through, TK. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, exactly. Send that Venmo. Things that confuse me about pro wrestling. Number three, why does AEW keep adding to their roster? So we had this past week, we had the Kenta appearance last week. And so that was obviously its own thing, adding another quote unquote invasion or mix of new talent coming in. Okay. That's great. Good. We'll put that off to the side. And a couple of days ago, the AEW announced that Nick Camarado and Aaron Solo are now members of the Nightmare family. And it's like, okay. And they just keep adding so many guys and girls, whether it's, you know, the full-time deals. Of course, one of the most fascinating things about last year in wrestling, of course, there was so many different things, but I found it was really fascinating, was the tiers of contracts that they have. And when Cody just kind of let that slip in an interview, I think with Red Velvet, and that it kind of explains that, you know, some people are on exclusive deals, some people are like a right of first refusal deal or something like that, and they can basically go work other places, but they have to, you know, and all this stuff. And they, you know, with Dark, they just, you see certain guys that all of a sudden you're like Danny Limelight, for example. Danny Limelight was a guy that's getting beat week after week on Dark. And all of a sudden you see him paired up against Fuego del Sol. And it's like, okay, Sol has been losing too. Limelight is also working strong. So you're kind of like, huh, if they're going to go with a guy, maybe Limelight is one of the guys. Then Camarado, obviously he's been working on Dark, losing, gets the opportunity against Moxley, doing great. And then the past couple of weeks, he's been doing six-man tags on Dark, wins, and then this whole thing happens. You could tell like that's the type of guy that they were starting to give some attention to, and they signed him. So that's another name in the mix, along with like dozens of people, both on Dark and Dynamite. For those that watch, obviously, you know, there's stuff going on at BTE that may tie into this, that it's like there's a lot to follow with everything. And I just wonder why, you know, they're adding and adding and adding. And, you know, to their credit, they're not subtracting. They will, you know, kind of put people off to the side. But I feel like there's a lot of people and a lot of stories to keep track of. And going back to the whole kind of point when making this whole thing, like, talk about like compelling. There's only so many people in the world that we can care about, right? From an entertainment standpoint, right. Personal standpoint, like there's only so much you can keep in your mind in terms of, I know what's going on with this and this and this and this. It's hard. It's just harder than ever now. So I, you know, like they make the announcement about the Nightmare Family. They haven't really fully fleshed out on TV what that means. Again, it sounds like they're just continually adding pieces, but like, I don't know who to focus on. That was one of the things about the Impact thing. Like, you have so many guys right now that are underutilized on the main roster. Like, what is, you know, why don't we focus on some of that and kind of get them going? And then this New Japan thing, and obviously because of travel restrictions, it's not going to be full on, but like, how does that play into it? And I don't know. It's just, there's a lot of moving parts and pieces, but they just keep adding to the chessboard. Like, it's all filled up to me. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I kind of have the same thought. And I say this and you kind of mentioned a little bit there, is like, obviously I don't want to take any, you know, work out of anybody. You know, I don't really want anybody to lose their jobs or money to get out of anyone's pockets or anything like that. I mean, I feel bad saying this, but I 100% agree with you that the roster is getting increasingly large by the day and increasingly large by the week and by the month. And it just seems like we've reached a point where, you know, what are you going to do with all these guys? Is there really a reason to have all of these people, you know, under your roster? And it becomes a lot more difficult when you sit in that booking room. And I think that, to me, that is my biggest worry, you know, is as the roster grows and grows and grows and grows. And I think this is the same problem that WWE had in their main roster. I think it's the same problem that NXT has now with the continually growing, you know, roster here. It's the same problem that WCW had many, many years ago, you know, when they were just signing everybody under the sun and had 300 people under contract or whatever, is that it just becomes much more difficult to sit down and say, okay, we want to have a plan or a purpose or a reason for every single person here. You know, what is this person's story? What is our plan for this person, you know, this year? And it felt like AEW was really good at kind of, you know, whether it's, you know, storyboarding it or planning it out or doing whatever. It felt like everybody had sort of okay, this is their purpose. This is what they do. This is their current feud. This is, you know, their trajectory, all that sort of stuff. As you get bigger and bigger and that roster becomes bigger and you have to now consider that for way more people. You can't, you know, you can't just have 20 people on the roster where you have no plan or no real purpose, you know, for them. And you know, the other issue that unfortunately might come, you know, in the coming weeks and months is a very similar thing that happens in any roster that gets that big, is that then you have those people that don't have plans or that aren't, you know, figured into something right now or aren't regularly wrestling on Dynamite or aren't, you know, in line for titles. Mm-hmm. Those people might start chirping a little bit and saying, you know what, this place kind of sucks. And yeah. And like, if they get released, maybe they could say, yeah, they had no plan for me. And da, 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 da. Like, I worry about that from an optics standpoint is when you had your little family there, when it first started, your little 20, 30, you know, person roster, it felt like everybody was all in, you know, for lack of a better term. It felt like everybody was like all, you know, with one common goal, and we're all trying to kind of do this thing together. And obviously you're going to have to grow the roster a little bit from that core group, but I'm right with you. It just feels like they're adding people to add people. And at some point, unless you're really going to expand Dark, which, I mean, dear God, it's already like 4 hours long every single week. And without that extra hour of television, it's just, to me, I'm not quite sure what you know, what the purpose of signing all those people are. And it to some point it becomes very similar to what, you know, WWE does for NXT, where they just sign people to keep them away from other people. And I hope that's not what AEW is doing. And I hope they're actually, you know, thinking about it from a better standpoint. And it could be possibly as well that Tony and AEW are playing the long game and saying, okay, when things go back and when things are back to normal, we can travel. Well, now we have a big roster and all these partnerships. So maybe we can send Aaron Solo to Impact and he can do a little thing in Impact and whatnot. Or we can send this guy to this place. Or now we have the Nightmare Factory, which is a big time training school, and we can, you know, get the guys ready. Like, I don't know if that's their plan and that's their goal, is to kind of long term, you know, figure that out and try to, you know, get everybody, you know, at least working on that next level, or getting people in different places and getting people working all across the world or whatnot. But I'm with you though. I don't know. I think it just becomes a little too confusing to try to get all those things and everybody in one lockstep. Which they felt like they had for the first year. And I feel like, you know, increasing that roster and continuing to just have a ton of people maybe not doing anything might cause some issues. And like you said, there's guys on the roster now that you can already say are being underutilized. And that wasn't a thing, you know, for the first year of AEW. It felt like everybody right. was being utilized at least to some degree. And now there's like, you know, you look at the crowd of a Dynamite and you're like, oh yeah, they you know, they have that guy on the roster, that girl's on the roster. And it doesn't feel like they're doing enough with those people too. So I do worry about the optics moving forward for sure.
Yeah, you mentioned, that's something I've thought about before too, is the, you know, things have gone great. Everything's easy when everyone's happy, right?
Yeah, right, right.
But the things aren't going to be happy forever, no matter what, you know, even though it's run by wrestlers and all this stuff, there's still emotions and there's still promises that are made. There's still expectations. And I wonder about when you start to hear people, essentially start to grumble about things a bit and be like, look, this is, you know, how many more guys can we sign? You know, how many more, you know, why am I not getting this opportunity to bring in, you know, Impact guys or New Japan guys, something like that? I've been here for 8 months and was promised this, or we had some ideas. And, you know, there's the, you mentioned the Nightmare Factory. There's that expectation too. Like, is there, you know, where are these, and obviously when the indies kind of hopefully, you know, start up again, especially, you know, maybe a little bit more even this summer, and some of these people start getting work at other places, maybe they'll be, you know, happier, or they'll be content. It won't be an issue at all. But then you look at, like, with the wrestling school, it's like, where's the expectation they're going to probably get the most work? It's probably going to be obviously AEW and working things like Dark and so on. You know, what if WWE is interested in one of those talents? What if, Impact is, or MLW or something like that? Does that become a thing? So I'm just, there's, you know, I'm curious to see how they deal with adversity, because I don't get the sense it is a company that says no a lot. And while that's admirable to a point, because it's got them, you know, there's so much with WWE that you wish that they would say yes to, in terms of getting behind certain talents, you know, trying this. And, you know, AEW has done a lot of new things, and it's been fun. They brought real storylines back, long-term stuff, intriguing stuff. They've done so many of their shows at the end, you're kind of like, I'm really excited to see where this goes. Mm-hmm. But they just don't seem to say, it doesn't feel like they say no a lot. And I wonder when those hard decisions have to be made about, you know, giving this guy the push, or do we sign this guy, or what do we do with this one? I'm wondering how those conversations go, because you're going to have hurt feelings. You're going to have people that are like, I have to tell my friend that I've known on the indies for 15 years that he's no longer working here. Right. How do those situations go? And, you know, that's part of running a company. I'm looking forward to it, but I'm looking forward to seeing when they have to make real grown-up decisions, how that is handled when it comes to talent and when it comes to, you know, it's, who actually does say, look, these are way too many people here. You know, what are we going to do? Do we need to make some cuts? You know, we want to bring in wrestler X. That's a free agent, but look who we have now. You know, I think I'm not looking forward to people losing their jobs. I'm looking forward to how they handle those situations. Then what comes out of that when you start getting the, you know, post AEW release, shoot interviews like we always seem to look forward to when, you know, people leave WWE.
Yeah, no, and there's also, you know, something that you mentioned there is, you know, when the indies get that going and they're able to do that stuff. But, you know, think about it from the standpoint of, you know, Wrestler X, and I'm not, you know, naming anybody specifically, but Wrestler X is told, hey, you're signed with AEW. Okay, cool. All right, now we need you to go to, you know, this indie in Georgia. And it's like, I mean, no, I mean, I signed with AEW, like, I don't really want to. Yeah. Like, I'm done with, you know, like the optics of, no, I'm signing with your company. That means I'm, you know, in the big times. And now you're going to send me to go do a bunch of shots in Georgia and travel the country again. Like, I was already doing that. Like, this is, you know, that's kind of a linear move, you know, for me. And again, AEW can sell that by saying, hey, you know, you do this for us and yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, we can move you up the ladder and we'll push you eventually, or you need some seasoning or that sort of stuff. But like you said, that's easier said than done. Like, these are still human beings and they still have, you know, they still have pride in their work. And most wrestlers, other than, you know, just people that are just out of wrestling school or whatnot, but people that have been around the block, they all believe that they can do it. They all believe that they could be main eventers, and they all believe that they could have great matches, and they believe that they could get pushes and all that sort of stuff. Like, the thing, you know, everybody that signs with WWE has dreams of main eventing WrestleMania or whatever. Everybody that signs, you know, with any big time wrestling company has the idea that, hey, I can be a star. I can be one of the top stars in this company. Yeah. So that's going to be a tough pill to swallow if and when, you know, those things happen and they say, okay, cool, you know, thanks for signing with us. Okay, we're going to send you to this indie, you know, and you know, we're going to send you to Defy, and you're going to do, you know, 2 months of shots in Seattle for Defy or whatever. And it's like, I mean, I could have just done that on my own. Like, you know, the optics of that are definitely going to be weird. And the only way to maybe get around that is, I guess, making your own, like, kind of developmental territories, or really utilizing the third hour of television they're talking about, or doing more with Dark, or doing another additional show to Dark. But like you said, that and kind of the thing that I was bringing up a little bit earlier is just sitting down in that room and now, okay, we had plans for 20 people and storyboards for 20 people. Well, now we have stories for 60 people and 7 different shows. And it's like, that just becomes real difficult to do when you're a committee, you know, like the way they are, and you have, you know, 4 or 5 people sitting down in that room and Tony Khan being the deciding factor for those. I mean, it just becomes, to me, untenable with that many people and that many shows and that many different, you know, kind of tentacles all over the place. Mm.
So we're up on the hour. I want to give you a chance. Is there anything that that immediately comes to mind? Think of things that confuse you these days about pro wrestling.
I think one of the things, mostly, and we kind of addressed it there with Edge, but you know, one thing that at least, you know, we deal with on our website all the time as well is, you know, people that get very upset when you don't like the wrestling that they like. And you know, when you bring up a fact of, hey, here's what the ratings were for X this week, or here's what the ratings were for AEW this week, or Raw this week, or whatever. And it's like, I just kind of a thing to fans is like, you know, if don't worry about it. Like, if you like it, if you like that show and you like that company, or, you know, you enjoy it or you have fun, like, that's cool, man. Don't worry what other people think. Like, don't care if, like, you don't, you know, it shouldn't be life or death. You know what I mean? We're all kind of, you know, a lot of us here, a lot of these websites, we're just analyzing wrestling at the end of the day. And we all love wrestling. We all want wrestling to be really, really good. There's this idea that you're like, if you like this company maybe more week to week than this company, like, you want the other company to die. And it's like, if it was up to me, every company would be doing amazingly well. It'd be great for business for both of our, you know, websites and all of us if more people watch wrestling. And you know, I want wrestling to be way more popular. I want it to be huge. I want NXT to grow and be giant. I want AEW to grow and be giant. I want WWE to grow and be giant. I want New Japan to, you know, grow and expand into the US and be gigantic or whatever. But yeah, it's and I guess my over, you know, overall thought, again, you know, to the fans of, like, hey, just don't worry about it. It's okay. Like, you can still like your stuff without getting upset. But I think to a bigger point too is we've now seen, and obviously 2020, a very, very strange year for all of us. But in general, I think one thing that maybe confuses me or has me kind of stumped about wrestling is and it's something that you have alluded to a few times throughout the show, is like, what can pro wrestling do to grow, and what can we do to get this thing to that level where again, it's growing. And I don't know that any wrestling company really has that plan or that idea or really any sort of semblance of an idea of how to do it. And it makes me wonder if, like, everybody just kind of forgot how to, you know, grow and make stars and do all that sort of stuff, or if we're just in a weird period of where people have so many entertainment options that we've just kind of, we got wrestling fans and these are wrestling fans, and maybe a few people trickle in here and there, but ultimately, you know, the days of, you know, millions of people, you know, watching wrestling are over. And I don't know I don't know if that's a thing that like current, you know, WWE and AEW to a lesser extent and Impact and all that sort of stuff just don't know how to do anymore, or that, yeah, I don't know. It's one thing that's just kind of perplexed me is that we don't see growth, and I don't know that I see growth on the horizon either. And it feels like it's been years and years and years since we've had that growth. So I don't know if everybody just kind of forgot or what's going on.
Yeah, to that point, when wrestling companies became content companies, I think in focusing on filling time rather than being compelling, that's when the big shift has happened, right? Because there's no deterrent. There's no, WWE's got another $1 billion. We just talked about for Peacock, for NBCU, for the network, which is primarily old content. Granted, it's, you know, pay-per-views every month and so on. But and that's in addition to the other, you know, $2 billion that they're getting combined from NBCU already and Fox for Raw and SmackDown. So it's like if you were to say this to them, they would just kind of point their balance sheet and be like, well, apparently we're doing something right.
Yeah, we're doing good.
But it does. It doesn't.
Tell me, man.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel right. Right. There's something that's just like it. The same thing with UFC is, they have these, great fights and things like that, but they have a lot of, most of their shows from top to bottom go like 6 hours, sometimes 7 hours. That's way too much,
right?
But they're getting paid because most people could just drop in, they just do the drop in thing. And I think WWE is content with that. I think that, AEW will kind of see where this goes, but with adding a third hour, in addition to, again, 2 hours of Dynamite and the almost 2 hours of Dark, sometimes longer, as you alluded to earlier, how much is too much AEW for people, or do they even care? Right. And you have these other companies just trying to make it. I think they're doing the best they can, but you look at Impact, we've talked about MLW exists, I think they're trying to do their thing, but running on a Wednesday night against NXT and right before NXT and Dynamite, I think it does not make any sense to me at all. But they're trying to exist, but for what purpose? People have all these eyeballs on this wrestling already. You have the wrestling obsesso, check them out, and I'm sure they have their hardcore fans, but they're not going to realistically do pay-per-views anytime soon. So it's filling a library of content to try to sell to somebody else and do this. And I think that's a big part of it. And then you wrenching also about the fans. That's something I talked about forever. It's just, I don't understand this thing of like having to declare victory on Twitter every time one company beats another in a demo. When I think most people that if you ask them to really explain what the demos are and what they mean and all this stuff, like they would be like, I don't know. It's a number. It's a number that validates the fact that I think this wrestling is better than this other one. It's just a weird flex of people just being so upset at another fan base. And it's strange to me. It's a weird instinct to have, but I think it also follows a lot of political discourse. And I think people just in general think they have to be on the side of everything and they have to defend their own wall no matter what, even though it's like, just, everyone could just relax a little bit. It's okay. It's supposed to be fun. This is the fact that we have all this great stuff out there. That's a great thing. But instead we're just like, this thing sucks. And this thing sucks. It's like, I've said this before on the show ad nauseum. When I was a kid, I did not have a lot of wrestling options at all. I had Superstars of Wrestling, Saturday Night's Main Event, and whatever I could get at the video store on VHS when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. That was it. And now it's endless. I could go back and relive my childhood every single day. But back then I'm like, give me anything you got, anything you got. We got a satellite dish and I was watching USWA, ECW, Smoky Mountain, whatever I could get that was on at 1 a.m. and I could pop in a tape and record it. Right. I wasn't thinking of like, oh, Smoky Mountain sucks compared to ECW. I was just like, just give me more. And now I think, because of social and everything else, it's just complain first and don't enjoy it and make other people's experience bad. If you say one positive thing, you're co-opted or something like this. It's exhausting, It's just really, really exhausting. And it shouldn't be.
No, it definitely shouldn't. But yeah, so that's less confusion at like an overall, like, you know, things that are going on in actual wrestling companies, and more just to fans. But no, it's a very weird industry right now, and it's not just the pandemic. It's not just 2020. I mean, this has been a transformative kind of few years for wrestling, and obviously AEW coming into the mix and kind of changing things, and the first real competition on you know, a certain, you know, week to week level that WWE has had in a while. And it's been fascinating to see how they've reacted or lack thereof, how AEW's kind of done it. So it's exciting times to be a wrestling fan. And I feel like we're still kind of in these uncharted times where nobody's quite sure exactly what the future is going to hold or what the next few years. And in some ways, you know, it's kind of like, you know, and like, you know, we talked about it here, a little confusing and a little kind of, you know, you're not quite sure, but it's also exciting in that same breath too, because I don't know what the next year is going to hold. I don't know what the next 2 years is going to hold. And that's pretty exciting to see is how kind of weird and different the wrestling world seems right now. And I'm excited to see, you know, where the future holds.
Me too. And you'll be talking a lot about it on Voices of Wrestling. So for those people that are uninitiated or have heard the website before and seen your stuff and all stuff, tell them how they can check it out, how you fit in the wrestling news and information ecosystem, and obviously how they can listen and contribute to the Patreon and all that. Floor is yours.
Thank you. Yeah. So voiceswrestling.com is the website where we do all of our stuff. We have we do less news and more kind of columns, reviews, previews on that website. So columns about, you know, I basically leave it pretty much open to, you know, anytime anybody wants to write about something or they have a kind of a topic. I always say the only critique or the only real thing that I'll kind of direct people on is when they're trying to write for the website is just be passionate about it. I don't care if I completely disagree with your point, that's fine. But if you're passionate about it, that's all I'm really looking for. And I kind of enjoy reading there. So we have columns like that. Again, we have previews for most major shows that are out there, as well as reviews for most of the major shows. We cover all of New Japan. We try to cover as much of the other pro companies as well, Pro Wrestling NOAH, as much we can about Dragon Gate as well. We're probably the top website, I'd say, for Dragon Gate previews and reviews. Also Joshi, we've seen a huge increase in Japanese women's wrestling coverage on our website in the last year. So that's been really, really cool. Alongside with that, we also have the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network, which I host the Voice Wrestling Flagship Podcast, which is the one that kind of got everything started. But we have podcasts about a ton of other topics as well on that podcast network. So we have a podcast about Dragon Gate. We have a podcast about Joshi. We have a podcast about just WWE as well, just a strictly WWE show. We have a podcast about AEW. We have podcasts about the music of wrestling, music entrance themes. Like, we have podcasts about a lot of different topics in the world of wrestling. So that's definitely something. Dragon Gate, again, we have a podcast completely devoted to Dragon Gate. So we try to, again, same deal. You know, when we try to have every podcast be about a topic that's just not being covered somewhere else, or something that I think is super unique. So I don't think of ourselves as like a competitor with any other website, because I think, you know, you get your news and you get your other stuff from you know, the Observer and Figure Four, and then if you really want to get into Dragon Gate, you really want to get into Joshi, you really want to get into whatever, that's where, you know, our podcast network can kind of come in and do a little bit more for you. So that is the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network, as I said. And then last but not least, you mentioned the Patreon as well. That's patreon.com / Voices of Wrestling. And that is mostly Joe Lanza and I, the Voice of Wrestling flagship hosts. And that's our additional content. So we'll do live reactions immediately following big time shows, every AEW show, most of the big WWE shows as well. We did it for Wrestle Kingdom as well this year, you know, back-to-back nights, immediately following, like the second the show is over, we're going live there to kind of talk about it. Addition to that, we do a retro series as well. This month, I'm actually doing one, you know, interestingly enough, something we've talked about a bit here. NXT, I'm going back and watching some of the first few NXT takeovers and NXT specials to kind of get an idea of like, hey, remember when NXT was like really fun and really exciting? and in a weird way as well, I just kind of stumbled upon, you know, this idea. And then also remembering, oh yeah, the NXT arrival was like the arrival of the WWE network. That was like the first thing that they streamed. And now, you know, kind of a pertinent to the topic that you talked with Brandon, you know, last week on the show, is what we know as the WWE network is dying here in a little bit. So this show will, you know, this series will act as kind of a, hey, remember NXT when it was like fun and exciting and different and unique? And also, hey, remember the WWE network when it was fun, exciting and different and unique, and not, you know, whatever you want to call it now, which is, you know, on its deathbed and, you know, on death's door for sure. So we do retro content on there. We do something called deep dives where we kind of pick one big topic and just kind of dive in head first. The upcoming one we have is Joshi in the WWF. So every time a Japanese woman's wrestler was in WWF, we're gonna watch those matches and review them and talk about them. So this is not counting like current stuff. This is not counting Asuka and Io Shirai and stuff. This is like old school Bull Nakano, old school Jumping Bomb Angels type stuff. So we have, it's like 4 hours of matches, and we provide you all the matches as well, so you can kind of listen in and as we discuss it at length. But that is patreon.com/voiceofwrestling. We have a $1 trial tier, which has a few shows per month, a $5 tier, which gets you all the retro content, the Thursday tier reviews that Joe Lanza does, where he'll cover AEW Dynamite as well as MLW. And then for $10, we have all of our live content, because we have the Voice of Wrestling flagship that you can listen to live. Or, as I said, those live instant reactions or the immediately following shows. I'll have those on the $10 tier as well. So the $10 tier unlocks everything, $5 for kind of the retro content and some other stuff, and $1 if you just want to kind of try it out and see what we're all about. You can do that there. But again, yeah, voicesofwrestling.com, at Voices Wrestling on Twitter, even though you should probably just burn your phone and not use Twitter because it's terrible. But if you're inclined, if you must, at Voices Wrestling is how you can follow us there. So,
and I meant to start off the show with this. This is like, you're like the favorite website these days of Dave Meltzer. He's mentioned you guys in the newsletter, and he mentioned you on Wrestling Observer Radio, I think not once, but twice, talking about the top 25 matches. And it was he loves you guys.
I'm glad. Yeah, that's awesome. No, we just wrapped up our match of the year countdown. And I listened to the Observer Radio on, like, because my wife wakes up very early to, go to her nursing job. And, I just go sit at, work at a desk and, don't do anything. She's out there saving lives, and I'm just jacking around at a desk, doing stuff or whatever. But I'll wake up with her, she'll wake up at 5 a.m. and I kind of wake up at the same time and kind of do stuff around the house. So I'm like, dazily listening, I put on Observer Radio. I'm just kind of like, trying to drink coffee to get, shake. And then all of a sudden I hear, so Voice Around. I'm like, boom, what? what is going on here? That's awesome. So we did just wrap up our Voices of Wrestling match of the year 2020 countdown, and that is, it's not just our website. It started as just like, three or four people that wrote for the website. Then the next year it was like 20, 30 people or whatever. And then little by little, we've grown this thing into just basically allowing anybody that wants a ballot that's in the wrestling media. So whether you host a podcast, whether you do interviews, whether you write for a website, whether you run a website, whether you do whatever, we've kind of opened it up to any of those people that want to vote on Match of the Year. And this year we blew away our prior years. We had 270 different voters from like 8 or 9 or 10 different countries and almost every U.S. state, and just a ton of matches. It's like, almost, I think I forgot the exact number. I should have it in front of me, but somewhere around like well over 250 plus matches, maybe somewhere around 300 matches that received votes. And we do a whole top 100 countdown. We include every match that got a vote. We do an official like top 100 countdown, and all that's up at voiceswrestling.com as well. And we also, we also let people, fill out blurbs for certain matches and what that match meant to their, to them, and why that match was important to them and why they voted for it. And I think that's actually one of my favorite parts of the entire Match of the Year thing, is because you end up reading these just great mini articles about these matches. And it's maybe a match that you never saw before, maybe a match that you've, forgot about or whatever. And just reading what, how important it was to that person really makes you appreciate that match. And at the end of the day, like, all we're trying to do with this Match of the Year, we're trying to kind of declare a quote unquote, Match of the Year or whatever. And interestingly enough, this year, the first time that New Japan has not won in the entire history of our poll as well. So pretty cool for the AEW tag, the Revolution tag, the Bucks and Hangman and Omega. But one of the other things too is, like, at the end of the day, we just want like people to watch great wrestling and expose themselves to wrestling they may not have seen before. And like, this year was a great chance for that, because Pro Wrestling Noah had like three matches in our top 25, and a bunch of Joshi, Tokyo Joshi Pro and Stardom and a few other companies got into the top 20 and stuff. And there were a lot of people that were like, I've never heard of these wrestlers. I don't know who these people are. I don't know what this is, that then said, whoa, I checked this out, and that was great. And that's what it's all about. At the end of the day, it's just about exposing great wrestling to as many people as possible. So voicesofwrestling.com is where you can do all that Match of the Year stuff. We also have as Dave sort of talked about, the stat pieces by Jeremy Sexton, where we're kind of digging in now to the minutia of the list of, okay, what wrestlers stood out, what matches stood out, what promotions stood out, how did COVID affect the Match of the Year. So trying to do some analysis on that end as well. But real nerdy stuff is where digging into the analytics of our made up Match of the Year poll or whatever. But that's, if you can't have fun with it, then why even bother doing it? So
exactly.
We're enjoying it there. But listening to the praise from Dave and just hearing him mention has been pretty awesome. So I'm glad he's enjoying it.
Good stuff. Well, they're valued part of the wrestling ecosystem. I hear a lot about you guys a lot, and checked out your stuff before. And it's good stuff, and I'm glad you guys are around. Rich, it's been a ton of fun. I'm glad you're here. And as soon as I come up with some more things, that confused me about pro wrestling, I'll send you a text or whatever, and we'll get you back on. We'll bitch some more. How about that?
Yeah, that's why I tried at the end, be like, yeah, great wrestling, it's good, yeah, I love it, but yeah. There's some stuff that's confusing and annoying too. Don't worry.
Exactly. That's what makes it all fun. Rich Craze, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
All right, big thanks to Rich Craich for stopping by. Obviously, check out the great work they all do at voicesofwrestling.com. Support them. And yeah, they do a lot of great stuff, especially around Observer Hall of Fame time and maybe in year in bounding time. But definitely know Hall of Fame time, they do a lot of stuff, which is, it's cool to see. It's cool to see other websites getting in on the action and talking about that stuff. And it's a good place for it. So definitely support them, check them out, and glad they're part of the ecosystem. With all that being said, yeah, I think we're good. I think we're good for this week. May have a second show later this week, depending on who I can get, talking about the Bellator and Showtime deal. Kind of intrigued about that for a few different angles, so I'm going to save that for later this week. Thanks to all you guys for listening. You have a lot of choices in your podcast day, and the fact that you spend any time with me or any of our great podcast podcast hosts would be something. Here at WrestlingObserver.com means a lot to me and everyone that does shows here on the network. So until next time, insert catchphrase here.